This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Later in the hour, astronaut Don Pettit, who shot the millionth photo from the International Space Station, joins us to talk about the joy of photography from 200 miles above the Earth. But first, the 21st Century Cures Act has passed the House and now the Senate with broad bipartisan support. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky spoke at an emotional procedural vote this week with Vice President Joe Biden presiding.
I think it's fitting to dedicate this bill's critical cancer initiatives in honor of someone who'd be proud of the presiding officer today, and that's his son, Beau. And in just a moment, that's exactly what the Senate will do. Renaming the NIH's cancer initiatives in this bill after Beau Biden.
Joe Biden's son, Beau, died last year of a brain tumor, and the dedication made for a really an emotional day in the Senate, with at least one senator wiping his eyes. The bill will now head to President Obama's desk, where he's pledged to sign it. And it is an enormous bill, which, other than the cancer moonshot, also addresses the growing opioid epidemic, mental health research, and genetic medicine. And here's a big one. It could change how the FDA regulates drugs and devices by speeding up that process. Is that such a good thing? Here to answer those questions, unpack the act, are my guests. Cindy Lupkin is a correspondent at Kaiser Health News in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. John LaMattina is the former head of Pfizer R&D, and he writes about the pharmaceutical industry at Forbes. He's here in our New York studios, so welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
Our number, if you'd like to talk about, 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry. Sydney, you've written that this is one of the most lobbied health care bills in recent history.
Yeah. Basically, there are more than 1,400 registered lobbyists on this bill, representing more than 400 different organizations, from pharmaceutical companies and device companies to universities and hospitals, patient groups focused on specific diseases, and then advocacy groups as well.
And you wrote it at Kaiser Health News that pharmaceutical and medical device companies are one of the big winners of this bill. Why is that?
Basically, the bill makes the approval process a bit more flexible. For instance, the secondary use approvals for already approved drugs. So if there's a drug that's already been approved and you want to get an additional use approved for it, it allows something called real world evidence, which is anecdotal evidence, research from observational trials, insurance claims data, things that are different from the traditional phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials, which are very expensive. So this could stand to save the pharmaceutical companies and device companies money. Critics say that this also opens the door to unsafe approvals.
Mm-hmm. John, you're a veteran of the drug industry. Your reaction to this leeway the FDA will have?
What's worrisome to me is a little bit different from Sydney's, but not totally. Let me use an example from last week. There's a growing need, cry for new drugs to treat Alzheimer's disease. And just last week, Lilly reported results of a compound that they had high hopes for named solanezumab, and unfortunately, the drug didn't work. If more lenient rules were put into play, the FDA, and there are those who believe the FDA has far too much bureaucracy, that drug might have been approved a few years ago based on early clinical trials, which were very favorable, early safety studies in people that were very favorable, and some trends toward impressive efficacy. Had the FDA said, well, go ahead and start marketing this and just keep your long-term trials ongoing to make sure that it reverses the disease, this drug might have been taken by 1 million people for 3 years. And if Lilly priced the drug at, say, $20 a day, you would have had, they would have amassed $7 billion a year in revenues, which after 3 years would have been in tens of millions of dollars. Now, picture being on a drug for 3 years and having the studies, long-term studies, come back and say, well, never mind, doesn't work, it's like a placebo. Patients would be upset that they've been on something. payers would be upset that they were paying for something that's ineffective. And I would argue it would blow back on Lilly because people would be upset. That's you've made all these billions of dollars and there's nothing to show for you, essentially given a glorified placebo. So I think it doesn't work for everybody in the healthcare system.
Wow. Sydney, let's talk about NIH funding. In the bill, they get nearly $5 billion in additional funding under the Act, right? Sounds like a good thing.
So it does sound like a good thing. That's one of the reasons that hospitals and universities seem to be lobbying in favor of this bill, even as some of them had doctors on their payroll, writing in medical journals that actually the FDA changes in this bill could open the door to these unsafe approvals. The NIH funding will go toward Vice President Joe Biden's cancer moonshot, toward precision medicine, which is genetics research, and the brain initiative, which is brain research.
Hmm. Is this for sure, or do they have to constantly reauthorize this money every year?
So this is authorized. What they have to do is they have to appropriate it every year. But basically, that's just words. Every year it has to be approved in appropriations bill.
Mm-hmm. John, one of the big components of the act is the cancer moonshot that President Obama said he was going to give to Joe Biden. Immunotherapy drugs are really revolutionizing cancer therapy, but also come with some big risks. Is that the sort of the high-risk, high-reward drugs that you're fearful of?
Well, so that's a wonderful example. No, I'm not fearful of that, but it shows the important role of the FDA. These drugs have revolutionized cancer treatments. There have been people who have been told to make their final plans because there was nothing left to treat them, and these drugs came on the scene and actually saved lives. But they do come with a risk. They upregulate your immune system, and sometimes if your immune system is too upregulated, it gets out of whack. And so what the FDA does and what its most important role is to balance safety and risk. And a lot of times they will approve a drug that will save a person's life from cancer, even though you may have a greater tendency to diabetes. And let's face it, if you ask somebody, do you want to die of cancer in the next year or you want to run the risk of having diabetes, of course they will pick the cancer drug. But you need to have a regulatory body like the FDA to rule on these sort of things.
So you need to have a person in the FDA who's the head of the FDA who's thinking about these
absolutely.
Issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sydney, what's your reaction?
I think that coming from sort of actually before I was at Kaiser, I was at a website that wrote about studies for doctors. So I think that, yes, the FDA's role is to look at the best evidence and weigh risk and benefit. Oftentimes on labels, it says, this drug is only to be administered for this patient in this disease group after a first therapy has been tried or after surgery.
Mm-hmm. One of the most discussed topics in medicine in the last year or two is the price of drugs. Does this bill do anything to alleviate this rising cost of drugs?
No, it doesn't. That was one of the things that several different groups had written before it passed the House and said, this is going to be a lot of things that the pharmaceutical companies like. It's going to save them money. But where are the price controls? Now, in theory, if you're saving pharmaceutical companies money, maybe they'll pass those savings on to the patients. However, there are studies that have shown that typically, drugs are not priced based off the R&D. They're priced based off of something called what the market will bear, basically how much are patients willing to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And John, any prediction on what this bill might mean for healthcare costs?
Oh, I don't think it will have anything to do really with healthcare costs. I think that healthcare costs, you can have multiple shows, Ira, on this topic because there are so many different things involved here. But I will differ with Sydney a little bit in that I prefer to think of drugs being priced based on the value they bring to the healthcare system. And maybe that's the price that you can translate that or use a euphemism to say the price that the market will bear. But you have to really prove the value of your drug, even in the United States or certainly around the rest of the world, and negotiate pricing there based on the savings and the life or death type of medicine that you're bringing forward.
Mm-hmm. President-elect Trump said that he tweeted out yesterday, the day before, and a few days ago, drove this price of pharmaceutical the stock market way down because he says, I'm going to bring down the cost of drugs too.
Well, there are a lot of things he could do to help that. So, the big issue that came up with Martin Shkreli, the infamous hedge fund manager who took this drug, Daraprim, and raised the price from $10 to $750, that's a generic drug. anybody can make that drug. The problem was it made so little money that no generic companies were out there making it. Turns out there's a backlog at the FDA for generic drug approvals that are about 4 years right now. Trump can come in, and those, you know, all of those approvals will lead to competition and much, much cheaper drugs. All Trump has to do is authorize the FDA to hire more people and get this backlog down in a year or two, and you'd see a lot of the prices of these drugs, which should be very cheap, come way down.
What do you mean hire more people? There are openings that need to be filled?
Well, I think they need more people to go through this backlog. Absolutely.
Sydney, you agree?
So there are actually a lot of openings that the FDA has been operating with. So I think there are actually fewer in the generic area than in the new drug area, but I want to double check on that. In CDER, the part of the FDA that approves new drugs, they've been struggling with a 700 employee backlog. So just to sort of back up regarding generics, there in 2012, to sort of start to address this backlog, they initiated something called the Generic Drug User Fee Amendment. GDUFA is the acronym. And what that did was that charged fees for the application to bring on new employees. And actually, in the last, 4 years since 2012, they brought on an additional 1,000 employees. But, and I've also written for this on KHN.org, although they are approving more generic drugs than they have in the past, they still have a very long median approval time of, I think, 47 months.
That's 4 years.
I've heard higher numbers, but perhaps Sydney is closer to it, knows more. But I've heard the number of generic drugs out there are in the hundreds waiting to be approved.
Wow. So is the consumer, in the last seconds I have, going to benefit from this bill, do you think, John?
What I love about the bill are the additional money to the NIH. $5 billion is a lot of money. They can use 5 times that amount, 10 times that amount. And some of the other things, the cancer moonshot, it's hard to argue with any of that. It's great stuff.
Sydney, good, bad, and unbalanced.
I think it basically remains to be seen. There are things that if the money is appropriated every year, that's great. If the FDA is able to sort of weigh the risks and benefits and use any discretion that it has, that's also great. But it really remains to be seen.
Sydney Lupkin, correspondent at Kaiser Health News in Washington. John LaMattina, who writes about the pharmaceutical industry at Forbes. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after the short break. Stay with us.